So how are your holidays going? Maybe kids home from school, relatives visiting. How many battles over smartphones have you had? My extended family noted a marked difference from a couple years ago when we used to play that game where everyone had to put their phone in the middle of the table and the first one to need it was a loser and nobody wanted to be the loser. And now it's not that teens in particular grabbed their phones faster than in the past. They couldn't even give them up. Sherry Turkle is a clinical psychologist and sociologist at MIT. She's author of the recent book, Reclaiming Conversation, The Power of Talk in a Digital Age. But that's not her first book on what she sees as the influence of technology on us. And this holiday, when families are trying to converse, we've asked her to weigh in. Sherry, are you hearing this? That it's worse?
Yeah. Well, let's not call it worse. Let's say big change and very much a turning point for families trying to keep a conversation going, trying to keep an intergenerational conversation going.
Now, you call this the flight from conversation, what's happening. It does feel worse than when you wrote your first book, Alone Together, which was about technology.
Yeah. The reason I don't want to call it worse is I think that people are starting to notice. You're noticing, the families I'm talking about are noticing. What they're sensing is that there's a new way of doing things and they're feeling a loss. And I think that it's really an opportunity for families to talk about that loss, talk about how we are all, not just teenagers, but everyone, having a hard time, you know, taking our hands off our phones. And that we need to pull together in order to have the conversations that count.
Well, and I mentioned kids doing it, and we have great kids in our extended family. But you talk about kids in your research telling you that they are feeling cut off from the adults. They feel it's the adults doing it to them.
Yeah, that's also why I don't want to sort of, you know, point too many fingers at the kids, because I think that in my research, one of the turning points in my research was interviewing a 14-year-old girl who talked about telling her father, you know, "Daddy, stop Googling. I want to talk to you." When he, you know, pulled out a phone ostensibly to look something up in order to enrich their conversation. And of course, in the course of doing that, cut her off. Yeah. And, you know, the research is so clear that when we put a phone on a table, two things happen to a conversation. It moves to more trivial matters, and we feel less empathy with the person or the people we're speaking
to. Why is that? Take the empathy. Why?
Because we feel that the person we're talking to really has their mind both on us and somewhere else. At any moment, they're signaling with that phone that they could be taken away to all the other places they can go.
And you can't do two things at once. I mean, the research has shown that.
You can't do two things. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's why you say this is far more dangerous to our mental health than, you know, teenagers have always, you know, gone and slammed the door and listened to the Beatles, you know, by themselves. But that's they're separating themselves. It's you're talking about people being in the same space.
Yes.
And not interacting with each other.
Yes, that's what's really different here. I mean, people, you know, often say to me, well, look, people always, you know, had books and, you know, removed themselves to read books. I mean, what's the difference? And the difference is that when you're sitting opposite someone, you don't put your hand up in a gesture of, you know, please pause and say, you know, I want to spend 3 minutes or 4 minutes with Madame Bovary. I mean, you kind of, you know, you're there for the conversation, and then when you need to remove yourself, you do.
We're always
in two places.
When you put it that way, it's kind of, that's really what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a lot of behavior with our phone that is odd as soon as you kind of step back and allow yourself to see it for what it is. I interviewed one man who talked about how when his now 11-year-old was a young girl, he used to give her baths, you know, at night, and he would talk to her, and he still remembers those conversations with his toddler daughter as really laying the groundwork for their relationship. And now he has a 2-year-old who he gives baths in the evening, and he puts her in the bathtub, and he makes sure she's safe, and he sits on the toilet seat, and he does his email on his iPhone. Hmm. The phrase that comes to mind as families describe these new patterns of behavior, you know, is technology makes us forget what we know about life, that we need to talk to each other and be with each other.
Right. You say that among adults, there are certain codes that have been established. For instance, the rule of three at dinner parties?
Yes. The rule of three explained to me by so many people. When you go to a dinner party and you have your phone and you want to have your phone, and what you do is there's a rule, an etiquette, that let's say you're six at dinner, that three people have to have their heads up participating in the conversation before you feel you can put your head down to text.
If other people are talking, then you feel, oh, good, I don't have to participate.
Well, if other people are talking, you feel free, yes, that you can go to text without completely disrupting the social occasion.
So what's to be done? You also talk about researching kids who go to device-free camps. What happens to them?
Well, I'm very optimistic, as I say. I think that people are there's kind of a point of inflection where people feel like, something isn't working right here. And at device-free camps, in only 5 days, the empathy levels that have been depressed when kids come to the camps start to return. And kids talk about how they like their friends at camp better than they like their friends at home, not because they're better people or really more interesting, but because they are talking to them.
Well, what about adults? You talk about carving out sacred spaces where you will not have your devices, but it's the worst thing in the world for someone like me because I always feel I have to be available for an emergency. And along comes this technology, which is, perfect, but horrible. You know, and I've talked to other friends. It's right there charging when you wake up in the morning. But that feeling that, oh, no, there's something that might happen. And so what do you do about that?
Well, I think the first thing we need to do is to accept our vulnerability. In other words, we've created a technology that really is disrupting our lives as well as enhancing our lives. And once we accept that we're vulnerable to this, we can begin to design around that vulnerability. So, for example, you don't use your phone as an alarm clock, which is something that most people do. They bring their phone into the bedroom, and when they wake up in the middle of the night, they're checking their texts, they're checking their mail. This is not a good idea to be on constant, vigilant alert. No phones at the table, ever. No phones in the car. The car is a precious place for families. It's a precious place to have a moment to think. I mean, part of the problem with the phone is not just that we're not being with each other, but we're not allowing ourselves to take time to be alone with ourselves.
Do you think there will be technology to help us break our need for technology? I was just reading about silverware and dinnerware that people are inventing to help people eat less. You know, literally telling you that.
I believe there's going to be technology that's going to be designed for our vulnerability to the kinds of phones that we're making now. In other words, the phones that we have now are designed to keep us at them all the time. And, you know, by changing the design of the phone, you can turn it into something that makes it harder to be at them all the time.
Meaning what? Like what?
Well, you know, it's kind of like the do not disturb, where you tell the phone, it becomes the norm that the phone doesn't interrupt you all the time. You know, the phone senses that you're into a car, and it knows that in that environment, it is absolutely not going to interrupt you except for the greatest emergency. And so you're just not, you know, it's just not an issue that you're going to be tempted, as I watch people doing all the time, texting while they're driving. The phone is going to be helping you to say, this is not an appropriate use of this device.
A little look at the future. With Sherry Turkle, MIT clinical psychologist and sociologist, also author of many books, including the most recent Reclaiming Conversation, The Power of Talk in a Digital Age. Sherry, thank you, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you so much. You too.